You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres.
Go Padres.
I am oddly optimistic, Nick.
Are you?
Yeah, we are. Our record shows maybe the worst team ever. We could compete with that. But I like what I'm seeing, and the things that are wrong are very fixable to me.
How so?
Well, if I'm managing and I'm the general manager, what I have to trade and what I have coming up makes bad decisions of the past a lot more easy to let go of.
Okay, yeah.
We do owe Hosmer a lot of money.
Yeah. We're going to get into that.
Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
We're still not spending a lot of money, even though we owe a few people a lot of money. Our yearly salary is low. I don't know. I'm just very optimistic about the team, even though we are horrible.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think the Brad Hand trade happening early in the deadline process
made it less painful.
Yeah, we got something.
And the fact that he got lit up right away made it a little less painful. I think he gave like a 2-run home run his first time out, so that was nice. Not to root against him at all. I wish him the best, but
it is
it just
nice.
Made us feel it, like no, we feel, won the trade.
You go know? Towards that feeling. That's a good feeling to have.
I got to find optimism wherever I can at this point. Yeah.
Well, we don't have any Dallas today, but we have a very special guest, Anderson Hagler from the USD Vista. He's the sports editor at the USD Vista. And I can't talk, but
all of the UC.
I know.
Yeah, it's tough. They're all tongue twisters.
I actually practiced that in the car, but thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's my first podcast, but I'm excited to be here, excited to get started.
Yeah. So you are 20 years old.
I am. I got a birthday coming up about 2 weeks, but 20 years old. In the fall, I'll be a senior at the University of San Diego.
Wow.
Wait, maybe it sounds like you skipped a few there or my math is off.
I'm just really young for my age.
Good, good. Well, I was going to ask, I've thought everyone in their 20s, or at least that was 20, has their own podcast, and this is the first time you've been on one.
Well, it's funny you mention that. I mean, my good friends and I, both of whom are college students, have been toying with the idea of starting our own podcast, but have not gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask for some tips on how to do ours better, but this is...
So you're turning 21 in 2 weeks.
Just about.
That's just in time for the Kept Faith's Ice Cream Social at Bay City Brewing.
Yes, it is.
Come on down. We're going to have a live podcast. We're going to have ice cream. We're going to have amazing guests. Anderson will be there. You can get him real legally drunk. And
wow.
We're going to drive him home, I think. That's the idea. But come down. We're going to have a great event at the Bay City Brewing Company in down by the sports arena. It starts at 6:00. It's a Sunday afternoon. Then we're going to play sports trivia afterwards. So check it out.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. Fun. Lots of things to do.
Yeah, so you'll be legal. You'll be buying beers, right?
Well, that was the funny part. I saw the flyer and I saw a brewing company. I was like, "Well, wait, like, am I going to be able to go there? Am I going to be like, get carded?" And then I realized by then I'll be 21, like you said.
Everybody, come down, buy Anderson a beer, support the arts. I think that's it. And if you want to support us, you can support us at the patreon.com/thekeptfaith. Money towards that will go to sending Anderson home safely in a Lyft or an Uber. We'll decide that later. But so that'll be a great event. And come down. There's going to be some amazing guests. It might be a prize fight. I don't want to say who they are yet, but there's going to be fireworks, I think. So,
oh, yeah?
Yeah, we got people, dude.
Fired up?
I think it's going to be crazy.
Good.
But we're going to have a great discussion about the Padres, San Diego sports, and then after that, we're going to just do trivia and see if anybody can take down the
team saw.
Yeah. The media.
Are we talking about Hacksaw?
Oh, well, yeah. The last live event we had at the Whistle Stop.
His namesake.
Some prominent media members, Darren Smith, Ben Higgins, Who else was it? It was like Brady Phelps was in it. There was a bunch of people that they formed a super team and they beat everybody. And they
I thought Woods was on it, but he wasn't.
He left, I think. But right. They called it Team Saw, and they won. Bernie Wilson, the god. Okay. He won. They all won, and they've been talking a lot of crap online. They're pretty cocky about it. So somebody has to come down and take them down. So that's going to happen after the recording.
Yeah, there's grown men now studying in their high school libraries.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at two o'clock in the morning while their kids are sleeping to make sure that they win.
Bring a ringer from USD, possibly.
Well, it's funny you mention Hacksaw. I was at the gym today in Escondido, and I actually saw him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen him a couple of times there, but I always kind of do a double take when I see he's wearing a nice Padres pullover. So it's good to see him working out.
So, okay, we got to dig into this. Yeah. We got to dig it. I knew he lived up there, but I didn't want to say it. That's great. But he's been on the podcast a couple times. He's a friend. So what's he doing in the gym?
You know,
is he a treadmill guy?
He was kind of on his way in when I was on my way out, but yeah, I just kind of crossed paths at the front door. I don't really know him. I met him at a couple events, but I was kind of surprised to see him. You don't expect to see people like that out and about. But yeah.
Did he have a lather?
I think with the pullover, it was a nice pottery. It's kind of vintage, like a windbreaker. So I think that's what he was probably going for.
He's doing cardio.
I would say so.
He's trying to sweat it out. Okay, I like it. He's grinding. He's always working.
Yeah, I imagine he has the 80s like sweat V. You know, where you sweat down. Yeah.
That's amazing. What gym was that exactly?
Yeah,
Don't have to say.
I don't want to know what gym. I just want to know the brand of gym. What brand? Like,
if I say, well,
there's lots of gyms in Escondido. Like, is it a Choose?
It was
24 hour.
It was a 24 hour fitness.
Okay. I'm really excited to see Hacksaw in the wild. Like, just in public doing stuff. But when we first had him on the podcast, there was about a week where we had plans to meet at the North County Fair, the East Village bowling alley that they have there, and that didn't fall that fell through, and I just went to his office. But I was really excited about that. So
interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, so you grew up in Escondido, and you are 20 years old, so you don't have any cognitive memory of the 1998 season, do you?
I don't. I kind of take solace in that I was at least alive when they were in the World Series.
That's right.
So
that's
if nothing
right.
happens the rest of my lifetime, at least I was alive during that time, but no recollection of that.
So you don't know, you do not know what it feels like to watch the Padres win a playoff game.
Not at all. I mean, I've had more heartbreaks than anything else. I mean, anybody who's a Padres fan can relate, but in my lifetime, especially.
So how old are you when you are starting to love the Padres? Like, kind of understanding baseball, getting into it?
I think my dad took me to a game at Qualcomm. That was probably when I was about maybe 6 years old. But when I first started paying attention was, I think, the 06 season. From there, I mean, I was playing the game at that point. And I'd watched games before, gone to games before, but that was when I was really starting to understand the stats and pick up the UT, read the box score, and check the NL West just religiously, Channel 4 with Matty V and Mark Grant. So probably around that time.
Yeah. So you have you don't really remember, all the mythology of Tony Gwynn is kind of something that has been told to you or presented to you. You don't remember him playing really, right? Because that's 2001.
Yeah, I don't. I was talking with my dad and my brother about this today. My brother's 2 years younger than me, and I guess technically I have seen him play, but I, like you said, don't really remember any of it. Yeah.
It's kind of like us and Dave Winfield.
I think that's probably
not to the same degree, of course, but yeah.
Well, that's a little different because Dave Winfield's playing while we're growing up.
He was just on another team.
Yeah, or like Ozzie Smith.
Ozzie Smith,
I don't remember Ozzie Smith as a Padre.
But I remember Ozzie Smith.
I'm 38, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't remember those guys, but they're playing along. I'm trying to think of who. It's probably like Randy Jones for me.
Yeah.
It's probably the comp for that situation. So who is your guy?
Padre?
Who is like the Padre that it will always be your favorite Padre?
Well, I think Khalil Green just always has this kind of, I don't want to say cult following, but it's almost like a mythic following because, I mean, as everybody knows, he's out of baseball, out of the public eye, but I'd say him just playing. I played middle infield growing up. I still play on USD's club team, and seeing him flash the leather, kind of had a little bit of a flair for dramatic with the bat. I remember seeing him walk it off at Petco once, but probably him.
Yeah.
Emotionless, too, as he's, right?
Yeah. Maybe a little bit
that's
too
cool.
much so.
Well, it's such a
that
fascinating.
That warms my heart that that was the answer, that's,
I mean,
actually.
I think that, like, because when you're, so you're seven-ish, seven, eight, nine when he's playing.
Just about.
Yeah. For me, it was kind of like, when I was that age, it was like Garvey and Gwynn is emerging.
Right. But
like Garvey was the guy in my neighborhood. Yes. It was just, that's who we all wanted to be.
Everyone had the picture on their wall, everyone's house that I went to of him, you know, rounding first with his fist in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So
iconic.
Well, I mean, so this weekend, Trevor Hoffman is going into the Hall of Fame. I mean, how's everybody feeling? Is that, how does that feel for you? Because that's around that time where he's kind of fading out in his career. I mean, we don't really have a player like that who's going to be in the conversation for Hall of Fame. Maybe Adrian gets a look, but other
what,
than that,
what year did he retire?
Is that 8?
2008?
No.
Was it 10 years after you?
No, it's later. He played later than that. I forget what his last year is. He leaves the Padres and then comes
but
back.
But he's had Hall of Fame eligibility before this, right? This
yeah,
was like his
yeah.
last. So you've seen Hell's Bells in all its glory, though.
I have. I remember they had the bobblehead night giveaway, and it was actually night that he blew a save, and then people were throwing them back.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of a symptom of my Padres kind of upbringing.
That's amazing.
So,
well, I was thinking about this, and I wasn't very excited, but at the time when he retired, I wasn't like, that's very impressive. But now looking back, I don't know if what – that kind of closer position will ever happen like that again. Like what him and Rivera did is kind of unbelievable. And maybe it was just for that period of baseball.
Right.
But I don't think anyone else is going to get close to doing what they did.
How do you feel? How do you feel about the modern closer going forward? I mean, it seems like there is a slight shift in baseball where that role isn't going to be as clearly defined anymore.
I mean, the save, it can be argued that is, I don't want to say an irrelevant statistic, but I don't know if the meaning of it has diminished. But I think there's something to be said about whatever you want to call it, however you want to quantify it, having somebody at the end of the game with the mental toughness, the mental makeup to get those last three outs. I think I got used to it, like you said, when I was coming up as a Padres fan, having somebody just be lights out. It was him and then Heath Bell to a much lesser extent. But at least my perception of it was having that kind of Padres tradition of good closers.
Yeah.
And I guess we're kind of seeing, we saw the tail end of it with Brad Hand, but.
Yeah, yeah.
But Hand, looking back, is nowhere near what Trevor was doing.
No.
Like, yeah, I agree, saves is a totally worthless stat, but you knew when Trevor Hoffman came in for like
right.
10 years as a Padre fan that the game was over. Like, we don't even need to play this inning. There's no question about what's going to happen here. And there was something so awesome about that we don't even. That we might never have again. I don't know if that kind of a thing will happen again.
Yeah, I think guys like him and Rivera should probably get, they should get rewarded because it was so clear that the team and the communities actually, that was his role. And the stakes were so high for them in that time. Now it's people want the high leverage save or like the hold in the right area. I think that's probably where the game's going. But I mean, if every generation has like two guys that get in, I don't know if Wagner's going to get in, but I mean, he's close, but if every generation has like Kimbrel should probably get in eventually. Like, I think that's probably what's going to happen. And
Kimbrel won't have, I mean, he might have,
he's racking up stats. Like he's actually pretty dominant.
Yeah. Well, I was at the social summit a couple weeks back
cool.
the stadium, and Hoffman was one of the kind of panelists they had. He's taking questions, and somebody asked him who his number one closer in the game right now was, and he said Kimbrel.
Yeah.
He said, sorry, Brad Hand, but it's got to be Kimbrel.
I think he's pretty much had the best career that could be Hall of Fame worthy going forward. A lot of guys can't keep up the role. I mean, they can't. It's a tough.
Well, that's what I'm saying is the longevity of what they did was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Well, that's happening this weekend, and we're all really excited. I mean, I think he's probably the last guy that we're going to have for a very long time until Fernando Tatis Jr. heals and
doesn't.
How was everybody's weekend, or you know, how did that feel to hear that news when Fernando broke his or messed up his thumb?
Well, it all happened, and I'll let you get to it, but it all happened with Margot and Hand. It all happened at the same time.
Yeah, Hand got traded, then Tatis messed up his thumb. Margot banged
his wrist,
but he's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was almost like too much information to react.
Yeah. And then there was a lot of emergency pods.
Your video lessened the blow incredibly. Oh, cool. So thanks. Yeah, that yeah. helped. How'd you feel?
I mean, when I first caught wind of it, I was kind of maybe wishful thinking, but a couple people that I'm friends with who follow the pod are saying, oh, maybe it's not a big deal. They're just being precautionary measures. And then I woke up on whatever that day was, and I saw the, I think MLB Network Radio was just Preller went on the air and said something, and I was just like, ah. And then Urias today got hit by that pitch.
Yeah, but
he's going to be fine,
right? He kept playing, right? Yeah, Urias got hit in the wrist, or was it the hand?
I didn't see it. I saw a hand. I saw he went down, but I was just having flashbacks to that again.
Yeah. So I'm in complete denial that it actually happened still.
Well,
so what? How did he do it?
Tatis?
Yeah. I don't know how
I think he was sliding into a base, right?
Oh, okay. It was a baseball injury.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's going to be out.
Your video was so good, I didn't know if he had accidentally
Dallas was good too.
Slammed in a door or whatever. But
oh yeah, Dallas and I both posted it.
Yeah, they were pretty wonderful.
It was a good time. Yeah. Multimedia stars, that's what we are. But no, but like, what do you think? I mean, Tatis could be your guy for your 20s. Like, this is about the best decade of your life. Hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it feels like. It feels like for the first time in a while, there's kind of some hope, a sense of direction. But it just the most Padres thing that could possibly happen for him to get injured when he's doing this well. After all the praise he was getting on MLB Network for the Futures game and in the national media and the rankings, for that to happen is just, it's just so Padres.
Well, yeah, like so people... You could hear people saying like they thought no matter how bad this season gets... Urias and Tatis might get a look at the end of the year. We might see, you never know. That was hanging out there for a lot of people. And I think obviously that's over. He's going to be out for about 2 months. He'll be okay for like winter ball. He'll be fine. It sounds like
he'll compete for the roster next spring.
Yeah. But I don't remember a player that has had this amount of hopes, but put on him. I mean, I don't remember the last player coming up through the system that everybody, people are calling him the savior. They're saying that for real. And I don't know if that's fair to him. I don't know if we should be setting our hopes that high.
Well, I do worry about that. I mean, a lot of these kids are not much older than myself. I think or Tatis is younger just by like a couple months. But that Baseball America interview he did where he was obviously compared to his father, but he said, like, I want to lead this team. I don't want to waste my career. I expect, like, multiple World Series championships. And I think there's some guys who are talented and maybe don't have that sense of confidence to at least openly say that. But
Will Myers, sorry.
We'll talk about him later.
I couldn't help it.
Well, just the fact for me that he's willing to come out and say that on the record. I mean, talk could be cheap, but to be willing to shoulder that at that young of an age and acknowledge the expectations, and it seems like he's embracing it. To me, that seems really encouraging.
Yeah, he seems like he has a really. Oh man, he seems like he's at AA and he has the best personality in the organization. It feels like he's just everybody loves him already. I haven't seen anything like this. Maybe it's
and the way he deals with criticism.
Oh, it's
like
fun.
He brushes it off and then reacts in a way that's he's totally not passive aggressive, and it's just totally he's pretty great.
He's good at the internet. Which is really going to be fun. I mean, that's what I'm starting to really appreciate, guys who can do that. Like Phil Hughes is really good at the internet.
He's good at the internet, yeah.
Phil, go on the 5.5 podcast for real. He's earned it. Eric has earned it.
I've heard. Didn't they set a date?
Did they set a date? Okay.
It's coming up soon.
Okay, cool.
Well, I don't know if he's actually going to follow through. I hope he will, but I think he replied to Eric's tweet and said,
Or Phil, come on ours. We have a very nice studio.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll treat you better, but they've worked harder. So.
Yeah, we give out baseball cards, Phil. Yeah. So let's, we'll take the second interview. But no, but I mean, everybody is looking to him as, I think people comp him as best case scenario. He's the next Machado. He has that similar profile. And I mean, who else in the system are you excited about that you're looking at?
Urias, definitely. Yeah. I'm partial second baseman, but I'm partial just the way he plays the game. I was also at the Social Summit, the first one earlier this year. I think it was in either January or February, and he was there taking questions with Lawson. And again, he just seems like another guy who's kind of ready to, he seems like makeup-wise, he seems big league ready, at least by my estimation. Him and then Paddock. I'm high on him.
Yeah. Did you get to see him up in Elsinore?
I haven't. I missed him by like a week. I was hoping to get up there. But the anybody who throws like that high velocity wise, I feel like we have a lot of crafty Lauer, Lucchesi types, but to see someone like that ready to come up really excites me.
Do you think he could end up being the next real great closer, or do you see that profile in him?
I mean, I'd like for him to be a starter.
Obviously, yeah.
But I do, like you said, I mean, he kind of does profile with the velo and with his demeanor, with like just like we were talking about earlier, with the kind of makeup it takes to be a closer. He has the whole, like, you know, he comes to the game in a suit. He's wearing the cowboy hat. He's very locked in, very stoic guy. I think that could work in a bullpen closer role.
Well, I think the community's ready for it. Like, just these big personalities that are good at Twitter, and they're like,
yeah, we're
good,
starving for it.
I was gonna say, we're starved.
Good at Instagram, by the way.
Yeah, the Padres are the only game in town. Let's be honest about it. So yeah, we're starved for it.
Yeah,
we don't have any LTs out there saying, you know, we changed the world today when he won like a second week of the season game, his rookie year, whatever it was. But
so I mean, yeah, like we are impatient, and it does feel like, especially this week, that the organization can feel that, because they seem to be in on trying to go after Chris Archer and Noah Syndergaard. How do you feel about that? How does everybody feel about that? Because that's seems real. I mean, they're getting mentioned in prominent, you know, baseball insider tweets.
Doesn't he have foot, hand, and mouth disease or something?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we don't need that coming here to San Diego.
Yeah,
well, with Archer, I haven't had a chance to take a super close look at the numbers, but just age-wise, I just don't know if we need to move prospects this earlier in the rebuild. I just don't know. In my opinion, I feel like we could wait, kind of let the prospects develop a little bit more, and then maybe won't be as good as them, but like an Astros Verlander type move. Maybe wait that long and then go get your final piece. Maybe it wouldn't be a final piece, but I feel like it might be a little bit premature.
How old is Syndergaard? I'm going to look it up, feel like he's already old. Like, his hype was 2 or 3 years ago.
Well,
right?
Archer's like that. What you said about his age, he's 29. He's one of those guys that you always think of as being younger than he is. He's a very baby face, you know, but yeah, I don't know. I heard somebody on Twitter write that like what prospect would you give up for Archer? And I maybe a Baez, maybe Quantrill. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the big reason is to go for an arm right now. I mean, I know it does suck to think about going into 2019 with the same pitchers and not going after somebody, but it just seems too early to me. And it seems like somebody up higher in the organization is really pushing for it.
Well, Syndergaard's younger than I thought he was. Sorry.
How old is he?
25.
Okay.
Well, I do think there's the maybe perception that Ron Fowler can get impatient, and I wonder how much of this is his doing, maybe putting some amount of pressure on Pro to make a move, and like you said, maybe have something better for next year, whether it's for the sake of selling tickets, or it also brings up the question, is there something of value having, I mean, you already have veteran presence, but actual like an Eric Hosmer-type player, but a pitcher to help anchor the rotation.
Right. And where were you on the Hosmer signing?
Well, recently, I mean, I've been disappointed with how he's been doing recently, but I'm definitely a fan of it. I think Myers has been fine in the outfield. He's swinging the bat. I mean, you swing the bat that well as he's been doing recently, you'll find a place for him. And he's serviceable at the very worst in the outfield. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you find a spot for a player like Hosmer. In my opinion, he's a proven winner. The leadership aspect is definitely there, and it hasn't been on display recently, but I am a fan of his approach, the way he goes the opposite way, the way he doesn't necessarily swing for the fences all the time like a lot of guys are doing these days. So definitely a fan, and I'm just hoping he's kind of get back to where he should be.
Yeah, when you read like the quotes that he had, I forget what they are exactly, but like, you know, when he says things like he doesn't really need to change his approach, or he's not interested in it, like, what do you think that's going to be a problem for him moving forward if he continues to hit too many ground balls? Like, it seems like, do you feel like people are turning on him?
Well, I just wonder, how long does it go on before, is it a slump for how long and then it just becomes a problem? And I think he's not a young guy. He's been in the league. He's a proven hitter. I mean, how much do you trust him and his methodology to get himself back on track? How much time do you give him? I don't know. But I tend to lean to the side of last year he hit, 300? He's kind of a proven hitter. I'd kind of err towards letting him figure it out on his own. And it's worked for him for this long. I wouldn't want him to retool it at this point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, how do you say to somebody who's 28 years old, he's basically locked down about over $200 million collectively he will have by the end of his career. How do you say to somebody, you should change what you're doing?
No,
I don't know how you can do that as a person.
And I don't think they need to. But his performance this year on the field is insignificant in the big picture, in my opinion.
Oh, really?
I think so. Like, wins do not matter at this point. Like, if it's about the tank, go all in. It's about him trying to build a nexus and a culture that everyone else can be a part of. I think a lot of the reasons he's not doing what he did before is because of who's batting in front of him, behind him. I mean, mm-hmm. it there's no consistency. There's no, like, rhythm in this lineup. And launch angle, you know what I mean? 10 years ago, this wouldn't even be a conversation you'd be having. He'd be in a regular slump and we'd be waiting to figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I feel about it. We signed the long-term deal.
I know.
Like, forget about him this year. Like, he is insignificant. His performance on the field, to me, this year is insignificant in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – I guess the fear when they signed him was that he would – they would win more games and that would ruin our draft status. I guess there were some people that were saying that, but
– Well, they were been wrong. A problem so far.
I know. Yeah,
doing just fine with
we're
him.
Tanking. Yeah. We're tanking. Yeah, y'all,
he's all in on the tank.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I could feel I'm trying to write about this right now where, like, it does feel like Myers and Hosmer will always be tethered to each other no matter what. Like, right now, Will is hitting and he's playing decent defense. Hosmer's struggling and people are just in, like, feeling Will and they are hating him. And I'm kind of hating Hosmer. Yeah. And, like, I thought that I just don't know if it's going to work. It just feels like it's not. I don't know.
Well, I just feel like we've never had both of them performing well or healthy at the same time. I mean, Will was hurt early in the year and Hosmer is doing as he was expected to do. And then Myers came back, and whether it's related or not, Hosmer has kind of fallen off and is slowly kind of clawing his way back up. But we haven't had both of them firing on all cylinders, kind of keying off each other in the lineup. And I think that would be really exciting to see and would probably help the Padres play better baseball if they could ever get synced up and perform well at the same time.
Well, it feels like Myers is – this is just what I feel. I should get off Twitter, but this is what it feels like. That it feels like AJ – like Will Myers is an AJ Preller guy. He traded – Trey Turner, which even if you like AJ Preller, that'll probably be something that haunts him, but he traded him away, so that makes Will Myers tethered to AJ Preller. And it feels, the perception is, like you said earlier, is that that Ron Fowler is meddling a little bit in baseball ops and he forced them to get Hosmer. So people seems like Will Myers is basically like the person that he's more of a Padre than Eric Hosmer. And that's part of the struggle of it. I'm working through this right now.
Yeah,
sorry.
No. well, for me, I never felt like Will Myers is the Padre. To me, I've always waited for some kind of passion from him.
No, but he's connected to the Sizzle team and he's a pillar. If you look at the Sell the Sizzle team, that era, they're all gone except for Will. Will's the one who stayed.
Oh, see, and
he's coronated into being a real Padre, and now Hosmer is not.
He's the, yeah.
And so people are defending Will. He's also hitting, but like.
Well, and the fact that he is hitting, in my opinion, is like, let's get whatever we can for him. There's got to be someone that could use that bat right now, and. I know their contracts or whatever wouldn't work out, but if you want to do a Syndergaard for a Myers straight up, that's something I would talk about. You know, that caliber, that's something I would – Myers is, to me, in my imagination, when the parade goes downtown San Diego, Myers is not on that team.
Do you agree?
I would – I mean, I might be thinking more kind of what players I favor versus reality and what the most practical solution is, but I'm partial to Will. I mean, I like the way he's been hitting. I think this recent stretch is more representative of the player that he is and the player that he's going to be. And we do have a lot of outfield prospects, kind of a logjam there. But I think there's something to be said about a player who's young and will be still kind of in his prime when the Padres are hopefully competing, and who's an established hitter. I mean, you take a look at the Padres' kind of entire org, he's one of, I don't know, three truly proven hitters who are kind of like a plus hitter who's there, who's made it, not about the projections, but somebody who's actually doing it. So, I mean, in my opinion, I'd hope to see him on that team. I don't think it would hurt if we move him, but I would hope that we didn't.
Well, see, and my thing with Myers is rooted in some kind of like weird jealousy / frustration, because if I feel like if I had Will Myers' ability and my passion for baseball, which I, you know, I mean, I don't, just from what he's shown on the field, I don't see.
I
like,
I
it frustrates the crap out of me. I'm like, just put my brain in that body and I will be one of the greatest ball players of all time. Like, he is just, he has like just baseball in his body, and yet his mind seems like, well, I have to play because that's what I'm supposed to do. You know, he's like the princess that is doing their family duty by marrying the prince, but they're thinking about, you know, the hot dude in the other country. And I'm like, then go be with the hot dude in the other country.
Well, I mean, I think it's hard to like psychoanalyze these guys on the field like that, but I don't know. I mean, do you think that he's tradable if he continues? I mean, his contract bumps up soon, and I don't even know if that's, it seems like we're going to be stuck with him regardless, no matter what.
I mean, I do think he's tradable. I think there's probably always going to be room for somebody like that on a contending team. I don't know off the top of my head who would need him, but like Travis said, dealing him for a pitcher, I think definitely could be an option. But I feel like
Syndergaard scares me, though. Like, I don't.
Because he's like scary looking, like he's just like this burly, gnarly dude.
I mean, he's got a lot of the same problems that Will Myers has, where it's like, is he going to stay healthy?
You know?
I mean, Will's going to end up missing about half the season almost. And like, teams are looking at that.
Well, and talk about like the weirdest reason to go to the DL I've ever heard in my life, but foot, hand, and mouth disease, because
that's,
you went
Noah,
to
a
summer camp or whatever, but yeah, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I just, Noah Syndergaard, you see the tools, and it's just, it's so enticing, but I don't know how many years can he sustain that. I mean, I hate to bring up my fantasy team, but I've had him for a couple years, and it's a nightmare. It's just
right, because he's
every year he's gone, so.
No more summer camps if he comes to town. Yeah.
Well, do you wonder if we have guys in our system that project to be kind of similar to him, as good as him, and are we willing to be patient and wait that out and just kind of see who we can keep and see if we can maybe – I just feel like we have a surplus of pitching, maybe especially starting pitching down in the minors, that maybe we could wait on and see how they develop before we deal for a guy like him.
Yeah, when you hear the team, I talked about this a little bit on, I was on the Gwintelligence podcast, and we talked about how the team is slowly, not just the team, sort of the media and the team, or the media covering the team is slowly kind of talking more about 2021 as opposed to 2020, which they were all about. I mean, in that time, I mean, what year do you think would be the year they should go after a top-level pitcher with money, similar to what they did before your time with Kevin Brown?
Yeah, I mean,
Kevin Brown.
Well, I was big on the 2020 train, like a lot of people were, but obviously that seems somewhat unrealistic now. But to go all in, to really sign that big final couple pieces out the free agent market, I'd say, I mean, 2022 is starting to seem more realistic for me.
Oh, man.
Wait.
2022.
I don't have it here, but Houston turned it around. I mean, their plan was long in building, but they went from not very good to good pretty quick.
I guess that's just the pessimistic Padres fan in me talking with, you know, the injury.
No, and 2022. Let's talk about.
And you have all the reason to be pessimistic, because my mind's been blown this whole podcast. I've been sitting here thinking about it in the back of my head. Like, at least I have 98 to look back on with some kind of optimism. And I always thought, you know, I was the saddest Padre fan just sticking with this for so long, because I'm 41, so I'm even older. But you have no, like, playoff wins to even look back as a memory. So you have every reason to be pessimistic. 2022 is fine, but I still think 2020 is totally realistic. In
2022 would be a 10-year anniversary of this ownership group buying the team.
Yeah, and like 7 years since the
like,
sizzle.
Let's take a decade to figure it out. And
that's insane.
It's I mean, I don't think you're wrong either. I think that's becoming more. That's clear. I mean, I don't think I mean, how are we? We have to work on trying to get a compete with the Dodgers. I mean, they haven't really flexed their money yet. By and then, who knows?
Well, you think they're going to keep Machado past this year?
Oh, do you think he's not going to resign? I mean,
he's in heaven.
He's going to be a 25-year-old worth $300 million or whatever the hell he gets. You know, like
with Matt Kent taking him out after the games.
Do you want to live
what else do you want?
Hey, Manny, do you want to live in L.A., be 27 or whatever he's going to be? Is it 26? I don't know.
It's ridiculous.
And you're going to be worth like $400 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's doing it. I don't know.
So you think that it gives the Dodgers a leg up on re-signing him now that he's there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, once you're in that city, like I said, Kemp is, I can guarantee you, taking him out after the games and saying, hey, man, look at what this city's really like. This is what the city's, and he's just, it's the best life you can live.
He's coming from baseball Siberia, too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what? He's going to be in the playoffs. It's
from Baltimore to L.A.
Yeah. But we're going to get Corey Seager, so it's all good, right? So we're just.
I mean, I was thinking Arenado along with that 2022 plan.
Yeah, let's get.
I'd be.
I'm listening.
I'd be a big proponent of that. I mean, I think he's. I want to say he's a free agent after 2020, and he's obviously a true third baseman and knows that, and he's not going to try and switch. I would hope not to shortstop. So he seems like a good fit, and it fits with the timeline as far as free agent third baseman.
So you're thinking like you're looking at the free agent class. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'm into 2022, man. You convinced me.
Well, I just felt like by this time, like this year, I felt like all the prospects, like I know they're not all of them are of the current AJ regime, but Manny, Hedges, and Renfroe, I feel like they would have figured it out and like they'd be close to firing all cylinders. But with the amount of work I see they have to do, whether they're going to be there in the future or not, I feel like that just makes me feel like we're going to need a little bit more time.
Wow. So you'll be like 25, just having a great time.
See, when you say 2022, just like, oh, yeah, that's in the future. And then you start saying how old you're going to be next to that, and it's freaky.
In baseball terms, it doesn't seem like a lot, but in real life terms.
Yes, when you put your age next to it.
Yeah, we're going to you'll be 25, our Patreon will be worth like $500,000.
Exactly.
You'll be working for us. It'll be great. It's going to be a great time in our lives. But like moving forward after you graduate, you want to get into baseball journalism, and like how do you see that industry going forward? I mean, it's a tough racket, it sounds like.
It is tough. I mean, I want to keep doing something with journalism, specifically sports. I think the dream job for me would be a beat reporter for an MLB team. But like you said, it's somewhat of a dying industry. I do think a bright spot has been The Athletic and how they've been able to adapt and kind of overcome. I think they've had a good amount of success in readership, you know, just charging that nominal
their angles
fee.
And stories are interesting.
Right.
Yeah, they it's write.
Differentiating reporting. So something like that. But it's a scary industry to get into.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, we were talking earlier, and your student newspaper right now, they still print on paper. Do you see that? How do you see that going forward? I mean, the UT, I don't know how much longer they're going to be doing that, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the engagement that you see on Padres Twitter with Kevin Acey, the engagement isn't with people writing letters to the editor after reading the physical edition. It's what they click on Twitter and then feedback with that. So I know with our paper, I'd say I'm still a big proponent of keeping it in print because at like the college level, people aren't going to go on the website. They're going to walk by and grab one.
Right, right.
But I mean, they've got to find a way to adapt. And I don't know if physically printing it out every morning is going to stick around for much longer.
The futurist in me thinks paper is going to make a huge comeback. people laugh at me a lot. But there is something about that tangible thing that doesn't change. Like right now, like just me trying to look up stuff on my phone, I wish I had like a baseball reference guide right here. I'd be way quicker. You know what I mean? Like,
I completely agree.
And as someone in my 40s, this has only been around like this for 10 years. Think about it. Like 2007, they introduced the iPhone. I think there's going to be a revolt against this.
I think there is going to be some kind of rejection of
and people like tangible things. Like people still like books in the printed. I don't like reading art, you know, like books on my phone. I just don't. As much as I'm a technology dude, like it comes out of every pore in my body. I think paper's making a big comeback. So
I'd say so. I mean, there's something to be said about. I mean, it's obviously the same words, the same text, but telling a story with a big part of what I do is the layout, and you can.
Right.
It's fun and makes it more visually pleasing to arrange the pictures you have for the game with pop-out quotes and stuff like that. So yes. I think there is more of a sense of kind of artistry to it, and it's easier on the eyes than just scrolling through your phone.
Yeah. So, I mean, you want to cover a major league team eventually. Like, for the guys that you're seeing now, that, you know, AJ Cassavell, Dennis Lynn, Kevin Acey, I mean, what do you see in those three? Are you taking from all their styles at all? I mean, is there one that you focus on more just personally?
I try and read all their stuff, but I think as far as just pure game write-ups, I'm a big fan of the way AJ does it. I just think it's really crisp, it's really clear, and it just gets to the point. It's something I can open it up, and without being too rudimentary and kind of not elegant, it just really gets the job done in an efficient way. The thing with Kevin's writing that I really like is the way, I think sometimes it does go too far and it gets kind of hard to read, but the way he does have these fun, interesting sentences that are plays on words and makes it more kind of, I guess, uppity and kind of just high class, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just, I do think it just kind of gets really difficult sometimes to decipher, though.
But do you think, I mean, like, do you come more, but you would come from more of the school of, like, as far as this type of reporting, keep your personality out of it?
Yeah, that's what I've always been taught. I mean, obviously, I don't have the kind of background to the resume to opine on the Padres, but I've always been taught report the facts, give the quotes, and, you know, keep your opinion out of it unless you're writing a column. I mean, it's people don't go to you because you're the beat writer and they want your opinion on it. They go to you because you're the link between them and the team, and you're the way that they kind of get the information.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, in my reporting, I always try and just keep it. And it's hard because especially, like, going to school there, you take a sense of pride. Like, at USD, like, I want the team to win. I mean, I know people on those teams, but you have to just keep that separate, and you have to be able to kind of keep it objective.
Have you had any, like, rough interactions covering student-athletes? Like, I mean, you're doing interviews, you're doing post-game, you know,
well,
pressers, I guess.
The
emotions run high, right?
Yeah, like, have you had any interesting things happen?
Coach Lamont Smith's yeah. story was really early in my tenure as sports editor, and it was just a really interesting but also really difficult story to cover because from the beginning, you know, details were slim, and people in admin, people on the team, other coaches don't want to talk about that. For people who don't know, he was a coach who was arrested on domestic violence-related charges. He was the head USD men's basketball coach,
yeah.
Placed on leave, and then subsequently the charges were dropped due to a lack of evidence. All happened over the course of a month, so I was just chasing down different people, the athletic director, kind of just really trying to get an interview with him, talking to players about it, and people don't want to talk about stuff like that, especially at a small Catholic school. So I learned a lot about kind of being kind of dogged and just really going after those quotes and not being out to get somebody, but really making sure you get it right, making sure that, because, I mean, that's the kind of story that if we don't talk about it in the paper, the university is basically going to give a statement and nothing else. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my first foray into reporting on stuff that wasn't necessarily a game recap or just kind of a fluffy student profile.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I mean, sounds like you're on your way. That's a, yeah,
hey, I love it, man.
Yeah.
What is your generation called? You don't identify as a millennial, right?
I mean,
because you know how millennials have like the bad rap.
I know. I kind of feel like I'm a part of that. I don't know. Is it Gen Y or Gen Z? I don't know.
But I don't know. They just came out with my generation from like 76 or 77 when I was born to like 82.
Yeah, that's
it's like a it's 5 year.
It's called Generation Catalano.
Oh, it is really.
Yeah, based on the character from My So-Called Life. It's a gap, it's like generation.
Yeah, it's the only one that understands both worlds.
I'm in that.
You're in that too.
Yeah.
Well, I was just, if you're a millennial, we'll all be fine.
Or is it X? That's or no, it's Y.
Y, whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah, I know it's characterized by, you know, always being plugged in, wanting that instant gratification. So that's kind of the perception, I guess, that we're trying to
combat.
Yeah,
but you're talking about, like, ethics and reporting the facts. And you know what I mean? Those are the things that, regardless of technology, are important that the kids today are learning. So.
Well, you're pro paper, so that's
good. I'm very impressed all around.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on. Where can we find you on Twitter?
You can follow me at ahagler5, and you can find my work for the Vista at USDVista on Twitter, both of those.
Well, great. Yeah, we'd love to have you back on and keep on the journey, keep journalism alive.
Yeah,
I think people in this building would really appreciate that.
So. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for having me, guys. Yeah, it's awesome. Well, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. We got to jump you into the Kept Faith family. We gave you some 2002 Topps cards. So we usually do 1992, but maybe
so just go for it.
Just go for it. Open it up. See if you recognize anybody. This is a game we play.
This takes me back. Yeah. Back, I used to have binders and binders full of these. I insisted my mom never throw away.
2002.
All right, we got a Jason Beer.
Mm-hmm.
Have Mike Bordick, Orioles.
Okay.
Earl Schneider.
Good old Earl.
Damian Miller. Yeah. Okay, a double card with it's a 1999 rookie. Tomo Oka and Masanori Murakami.
I don't know any of these guys.
Uh-uh.
Richard Hidalgo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fernando Vina.
Okay.
Alex Gonzalez. I could win the MLB hat of my choice.
Whoa.
Let's see what we have here. Ticket to history sweepstakes.
All right. I wonder if it's still valid.
Yeah. It would have been a Dodgers game.
Like in California, don't you still have to... I guess it's not like a gift card or whatever.
Well, that was a dud.
You have to acknowledge.
Should I open the other one?
Run out?
Oh, yeah. Okay, this is the 1996.
This could be a Padres playoff
team.
Yeah,
let's get something. That was pretty. No wonder this industry is dying.
Yeah.
Hopefully you get somebody good in here.
Okay,
let's
okay.
See. Mickey Morandini.
Okay.
David Need.
David Need.
Let's see. Oh, here we go. Tony Gwynn.
Tony Gwynn.
Hey.
We
awesome.
Should have a drop for that. We should have a drop for that.
We should.
Looks like a,
oh, that's great.
It's a special
an
card.
An interactive card. It says you make the play. Oh, it's for like a board game, so this would be a single because
okay.
Tony Gwynn
okay.
hits singles. Darren Hall.
Lost art in baseball, Scott by the way.
Roses. Shane Andrews.
Darren Hall.
John Nunnally.
We should discuss at the Ice Cream Social about strikeouts. Speaking of singles, supposedly this is going to be the most strikeouts in the history of baseball this
oh, wow.
season.
Oh,
hey.
Well, that's you it. Yeah,
okay,
we got
hey.
The Tony Gwynn, though. That's
cool.
All that counts.
Yeah, come down to the Ice Cream Social at Bay City Brewing and buy Anderson a couple beers, and we'll talk about the future of media, probably. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week, guys. Bye.
Padres are
ball busters.
Well hit deep right at the fence. It is going in a goal.
High right center field, way back there, way back. They're near, going. It's gone.
Great play off balance, throw to first. They got him. The sensational play by Alan Wiggins.
2-0. High fly ball, well hit right field. Look out, Maldonado at the wall. Terry Kennedy, home run.
Drive to deep right field. If it's fair, the Padres will have the lead. It is.
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego podcast network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, The Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Aaron at voiceofsandiego.org. That's E-R-I-N at VOSD.org.